Paptowitz. The images in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot from award-winning photojournalist Ashley Gilbertson provide an unflinching chronicle of the Iraq War. He is joined now on our show by Nina Berman, another photographer who has collected interviews and portraits of returned wounded veterans in her book, Purple Hearts, Back from Iraq. The books are published by University of Chicago Press and Trolley Books, respectively, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Gilbertson and Ms. Berman to the show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Ashley, what brought you to Iraq? Were you assigned to photograph the war?
No, I'd been covering refugees for 5 years, you know, prior to actually going to Iraq. And I went there in 2002 to look at, you know, the situation that the Kurds had set up for themselves in the autonomous region in the north.
But as a freelancer?
As a freelancer, totally, yeah. In 2003, I went back, you know, when Powell virtually promised war. And I wanted to see what happened with the Kurds this time. You know, if they were betrayed, I wanted to make sure the Americans were held accountable.
Well, this war is as controversial in Australia as it is here. Isn't it a reason that Prime Minister Howard was just voted out of office?
It would appear so. I mean, I haven't been in Australia for a long time, but following the news, yeah, certainly.
But the only reason I ask is being an Australian, does that have some effect on the way you might have covered the war?
I think it actually gave me much better access because, you know, when I would be on the street, I was an Australian. I wasn't an American. So therefore, you know, the Iraqis wouldn't immediately see me as a representative of the government, as I see a lot of the press. And with the soldiers especially, you know, I'd walk in and I'd be this guy with the New York Times. And then they'd say, like, what the hell? There's an Australian guy with a girl's name walking up on our base. So it was really disarming, you know.
Well, Ashley is not a girl's name in Australia, is it?
Right. No, not at all.
Now, Nina's a girl's name no matter where. You're also a freelancer?
Yes, I am.
What led you to begin photographing returning veterans?
I think it was partly frustration with the early coverage of the war. We weren't seeing any images of wounded or killed from the American side or the Iraqi side. And so I wanted to try and make the war more real to myself, in a way.
Well, the wounded and killed, especially the killed, we were denied that by government policy. So were the returning GIs feeling overlooked by the press?
Well, what I can say is that almost everyone I contacted agreed to be photographed and interviewed, so I think they wanted to tell their story.
Happy for a sympathetic ear?
Happy for anybody, I think, to want to listen to them and pay attention to them. And so many people are surprised that people spoke to me, but in fact, almost everyone, as I say, wanted to contribute.
And did you know from the start that you were going to include the interviews? No, because the photos can only tell us a small part of the story in this case.
I recorded almost everybody I interviewed, and so I wasn't sure if I was going to include them as part of an audio presentation or as text interviews, but I spent a long time talking to them first, which is the way I operate.
Mm-hmm. And you talk first and then take the pictures.
Right, exactly.
Ashley, was this your first time photographing combat?
I'd covered war before, but combat, yes. I mean, I had never, you know, you can be a war photographer for 20 years and never see a bullet fired in anger. But yeah, this was really the first time I sought after combat to see what war really looked like from the inside. I mean, I'd heard these stories of horror, you know, from civilians and people caught in the crossfire and even wounded soldiers and Iraqi combatants. But I needed to see what they were actually talking about and experience. I mean, I hate saying it, except I wanted to experience a part of that horror to really know how it felt. I mean, I wish I hadn't now, but, you know, I've sought that out.
You say you wish you hadn't now? Why? Has it had some kind of an effect on you personally?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's
there a PT, post-traumatic stress disorder, yeah, problem that people who are there experience, whether they're soldiers or not?
Absolutely. Anybody, including Nina, I'm sure. I mean, anybody who has had any contact with that country in any way, they come back traumatized. You know, I mean, you can't listen to these stories. You can't see these things and not be affected. I mean, part 5 of my book is called Yes, I Had Post-Traumatic Stress Syndrome. It's kind of a joke, except, like, I did. And I'm sure that, I mean, every soldier that comes back has a story like I do, you know.
Except that it's interesting to compare the images because there are some shocking stories of American soldiers doing things that we would prefer not to see them doing in one book, in Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. And then in Purple Hearts, we see them only under the most painful, sympathetic light. are these different guys, or are these two sides of the same people?
I would disagree with that, because I think that in some of the texts, some of the soldiers say things that a lot of people have difficulty accepting. You know, one soldier says, well, we're going to have to kill a lot of people, and I'll send them to Allah, you know. And another soldier says that it was fun, he's an adrenaline junkie and likes the rush. And so sometimes the texts are in direct contradiction to the images, which is something that I value in a way, because it makes for a much more complex look.
And we do see pictures of these soldiers holding guns to the faces of Iraqi civilians. And looking like the bullies of the world.
Sure, I mean, except, you know, when they're driving around and they're getting blown up, I mean, it's a 360-degree front line there. I mean, even if they don't get shot, even if they don't lose a friend, even if they come back alive and without being wounded, I mean, they're constantly under threat. So imagine coming back after 15 months in a place like that where you think you're going to die at every moment you're existing in that country, and coming back to America and, like, talking about Christmas shopping. Like, you're going to freak out.
Were you embedded?
A lot, yeah.
Was that something you could just do? Go to the military and say, I'm a freelancer here, but I'd like to be embedded?
Yeah, when I was freelance, it was difficult because there was so much press in the country. You know, at the outset of the war, I mean, there was more than 1,000 journalists that descended on Baghdad after it fell. So nobody really had time for a freelance hack like me running around. Except when I got a contract for the New York Times, it was really easy. I mean, they have, as much as, you know, they, like everybody else in the States, love to bash the newspaper, they love having us around, I mean, to tell their stories.
We've talked a lot with journalists about the positives and the negatives of being embedded. What were they for you?
Well, the positives were, I mean, it was something, and I say it in the book, you know, I would embed with every single subject I've ever worked with, whether it was junkies, skateboarders, refugees, or soldiers. I mean,
you become emotionally involved with your subjects.
Yeah, and it forces that trust and intimacy that takes weeks, sometimes months, to build. Now, the negatives were, and this is the case with every story, but it became more pronounced in Iraq, you know, I lost my objectivity at one point in Samarra on an offensive there when an Iraqi translator who was being overseen by Americans started beating the hell out of a suspect. Now, he took out a knife and went to stab this suspect. And I thought I had taken the picture. Now, in fact, I hadn't. I mean, I had, you know, subconsciously protected the unit that I was with. And when I went back and tried to find that picture and it wasn't on my computer, I thought somebody had sabotaged me. In fact, I realized then that I had really self-censored myself, and it was the first and last time I let it happen. I mean, from then on, it was, you know, take the picture and decide later.
Nina, is it possible for anybody to be objective in a situation like this? I mean, did you find yourself becoming emotionally involved with the returned soldiers you were talking with?
I mean, often I would leave, you know, really upset or furious, or, you know, some of them I've kept in contact with, and, you know, I would send money to some through people who would send me money and sometimes clothes, and so, you know.
Because they were having a hard time getting back into the real world?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would try and put some of them in contact with veterans organizations. You know, there were two that I was convinced were suicides from pretty much the moment I saw them. And so, yeah, you become emotionally connected to the work. At some point, you have to put up a barrier, or else you'll be, you know, a basket case, or you won't be able to continue with the work. But, yeah, you get emotionally connected to it.
Did they see themselves as victims?
No, I don't think they did.
Did they tell you that they felt that they'd been part of an important effort?
Some of them, yeah. Some of them, absolutely. I think each of them had their own individual experiences, and each of them joined for different reasons, and each of them had a vision of war that was unique, you know. But these were some of the things I wanted to know, what they imagined war to be before they went, how they were recruited, why they joined, you know, and what their experience was when they came back.
I'm talking with two photographers, Nina Berman, whose book Purple Hearts Back from Iraq is published by Trolley Books, and Ashley Gilbertson, whose book Whiskey Tango Foxtrot is from the University of Chicago Press. By the way, there's a slideshow of photographs from both books on our show page at WNYC.org. I've spoken to a number of returning GIs who've said to me that they were less involved with the effort than with protecting themselves and the other men in their, or women in some cases, in their units, because they saw themselves as part of some kind of a family.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Like, this goes back to embedding. Like, I felt like I was betraying a lot of the soldiers and Marines that I'd worked with when I wrote this book, because, you know, I start off as a very pro-war photographer, and then I finish, you know, pro-Iraq war photographer, and I finish as an anti-war, you know, across the board, a human being. I mean, I realized how horrible it actually looks, and that's strongly reflected in the text itself. Now, when I say anti-war, I felt like I was betraying these soldiers and all these Iraqis who had made this sacrifice. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, you know, thousands of soldiers. Now, when I actually started hearing back from, you know, friends who are Marines and soldiers, they said, you nailed it, because this is exactly how we feel. Like, there's no sense of mission. I was there 6 months ago. They're driving around. They don't know what the hell the mission is. I mean, their mission is to survive and get home to their families. The mission isn't to install democracy in the Middle East. I mean, when you're...
But isn't it to make it safer right now? Isn't that what the surge was all about?
Yeah. If you're talking to a lieutenant colonel, of course it is. Except if you're talking to a 20-year-old private on the ground, I mean, he's, like, buttoning down and, like, trying to stay alive. You know, there's no... I'm sure that they're happy as Larry now that there are actually some elements of Baghdad that are safer. The question is, will that last? I mean, there's no sense of mission like we talk about it, like, high, you know, in the White House or in the Pentagon. Like, that doesn't exist when you're an 18-year-old, whatever, trying to stay alive.
It's interesting that you went initially as a pro-Iraqi war journalist. This same sort of thing happened in Vietnam. And perhaps it's just because viewing a war is too horrific for anyone to ever remain pro-war.
Yeah, I mean, I that's certainly what it was in my case. Like, when I started seeing how horrible it actually is, what men and women can do to one another willfully, like, inflict this pain, this death, this suffering on one another. I mean, it really built a pretty strong case for diplomacy.
Nina, in your case, you spoke to soldiers who'd been wounded. Do you think that... they have a very specific memory of Iraq that would be different from others who perhaps just had emotional turmoil?
Well, I think that those who are able to remember the day of their injury, you know, don't forget it. There's some that don't remember anything from the
day.
And
don't many of them date their lives, the second part of their lives, from the day of the injury?
You know, I heard that on the HBO story.
Yeah,
but
I saw that film.
You know, I was doing this work in 2003 and 2004, and I didn't know what a live day meant, and they never brought it up to me. So, that word is new to me. But going back to what you said about the family, you know, sometimes the soldiers would say to me, I want to go back. And I thought they were insane, really. I mean, here's a double amputee or someone that's, you know, blown to smithereens, and they want to go back. And what happened was, the father of one of the soldiers, who is a career Air Force man, said to me, you're asking the question all the wrong way. Ask them if they'd go back if their friends were still there, right? And so I then asked the question that way, and the response was pretty much all the time, no, that they only wanted to go back to be with their friends, to be with their family, what had become their family, and also in a way to go back to where they were before they were wounded. So I think this idea of, you know, fighting for your country or fighting for your friends can be two very different things.
Do you think they also miss the adrenaline rush that you mentioned earlier?
I mean, one soldier said to me that he feels like his life is just boring now. You know, that it's the best has passed, and he's an amputee.
One well-known journalist actually wrote a book about the addictive aspect of adrenaline in those kinds of situations. Finally got him, weaned himself
Chris
of it.
Chris Hedges.
Yes, Chris yeah. Hedges. Was that an experience for you, Ashley?
It's something that, I mean, it creates this weird place in your mind. I don't know how much, I mean, of course there's adrenaline involved, except it's more about the survival aspect of it. Like, you feel like you're invincible when you run across the street under a hail of bullets and you survive. I mean, it's not just adrenaline anymore. It's where you don't care about your goddamn taxes. You don't care about, like, anything except for the moment. And you're living so much in the moment. It's more than adrenaline. It's like absolute survival. It's like basic. It's basic, like, human nature. I mean, and that's one thing which, you know, I don't at all get in the United States, except it's not something that I miss. I mean, not anymore. Like, maybe I think, you know, after the first couple of days of combat, it was, like, you know, hungry for more, except then you start seeing guys shot around you, and then you start seeing guys with, like, no arm or, like, a head that looks like a watermelon on the street, and death becomes very real, and adrenaline is secondary to that mortality.
Was there anything the Army ever tried to prevent you from shooting? Or was there anything the Times said, you know, we really... Ashley, don't send us pictures like this anymore. We just can't.
No, no. I mean, the Times were always, always open to looking at exactly what was happening on the ground. They were great about it. Now, as far as the Army and the Marines, I mean, you know, every time I would go out with a unit, there was always some sergeant or, you know, some lieutenant that would say, "Don't, you can go out with us, but if anything happens, don't shoot it." You know, like if my guys get wounded or if they die. Now, if you spend enough time with a unit, then you actually can shoot that stuff, and it is in the book, except. You know, often I'll be prevented from taking those photographs by either rules or by the unit. Now, I think that's unfair because when we look back, you know, it's unfair to the soldiers who are being robbed of the sacrifice they're actually making. But when we look back at this, the archive of this Iraq war is going to be missing those images. And thankfully, we have people like Nina who are actually actively seeking it out.
Well, Nina, there is a government policy that prevents photographs of coffins or body bags. But there's no policy that prevents you from talking to these wounded GIs.
Well, and even the policy that prevents, you know, photographing of body bags. I mean, anybody can go to a funeral, really, or try to, and people have, and that's a way around, you know, the restriction against photographing caskets at Dover Air Force Base. But in terms of the wounded, not anybody can just walk into Walter Reed or Brooke Army. I mean, you have to go out and find them. And for myself, I was much more interested in who they were when they got back home, you know, where did they come from? What were their hometowns like? What were their bedrooms? What did they look like? What did they have on the walls, you know? And what is this moment of transformation from soldier to veteran, which is an extremely difficult, unglorified transformation, you know? And so for me, I had very little contact with the military. I didn't really need any.
What about the families? Because... the cliche is he comes back, he's troubled, he's moody, he's depressed, and in some cases he's missing an arm or a leg or more. Mm-hmm. And his wife really didn't expect this this partial person to return.
Right. Well, that's certainly true. I mean, one soldier I photographed, his wife left him. Another one, when I met her, it was as though she was caring for, you know, three children. Her husband and her own two children. You know, but I think that there are certainly situations, you know, I photograph other situations where the girlfriend or the mother or the father, you know, is very committed and connected. But yeah, he's a different person or she's a different person, absolutely.
Photography has played a major role in the public's perception of this war, and the soldiers take pictures. In fact, they take a lot of pictures. Abu Ghraib.
The pictures the soldiers take are what this war is going to be remembered.
And you have a photograph of a soldier photographing a dead Iraqi.
Yeah, I mean there's a fascination.
Keeping
there,
a record of what was going on. Or
it's making.
What do they say about their photography?
It's a couple of things. I mean, one, that photograph of the Mahdi Army soldier being photographed by the military police in Kabul. That's because the soldiers don't see who their enemies are. So when one of them actually dies, there's this fascination of what does this guy who's been shooting at us actually look like? You know, this is a guy who killed one of my friends. Like, who is he? So by photographing him, you're creating a visual record of that. But also, and this is something I see in war zones all across the world, I mean, people take pictures and want their photograph taken as an affirmation of the fact that they were there. It's so unbelievable that you're witnessing this stuff sometimes, right, to see yourself in a picture or to photograph what's around you.
Did they show you their photographs, Nina?
You know, it wasn't something I really asked. But I think that Ashley's right that the record of this war is going to be, to a large part, you know, what the soldiers actually photographed. And, you know, we've seen this all throughout. You know, the Serbs in the Bosnian War, they took a lot of pictures.
Before the days of Flickr and MySpace.
Right. And, you know, we never would have seen Abu Ghraib if not for pictures, soldiers on pictures.
Yeah.
And you actually took a picture of that same dead member of the Mahdi Army as the soldier did. The whole thing comes off as kind of creepy, doesn't it? You know, there's on the one hand, you're doing your job as a photojournalist. On the other hand, you're giving us something that is really upsetting.
This is what war looks like. People die. It looks horrible. They bleed to death on streets. They lose body parts. Their heads split open. It's ugly. War is ugly. If we don't see that, then we'll continue to fight one another and kill one another. We need to see how awful it actually looks.
Nina, a listener who was a Vietnam vet says that it's not so much leaving behind the adrenaline rush, but what you leave behind is feeling like you're someone important.
Yeah, I think that's really a very true statement. You know, so many of the people I photographed, when I asked them why they joined, they said, well, you know, I didn't want to be a screw-up. I wanted to do something important in my life. And that, for me, was part of the heartbreak, as you see these people who had these huge expectations for themselves and their futures, and now they're back to where they started, often in very dysfunctional families or hometowns, with no dream, you know, no sense of glory, and that's when you get suicides and when you get really antisocial behavior.
Do you think the message of your book is like Ashley's, a kind of an anti-war message, whether it was intended or not?
Well, I think it humanizes the whole issue, and I think that it's it makes, I hope it makes it more personal for people, so that when you, you know, think about the Iraq War, you're not thinking about slogans like shock and awe or a mission accomplished or this sort of cartoon-like coverage. You know, you're seeing real people.
We have put, as I said, a slideshow of photos from both books on our show page. But if you want to see the complete thing and also read the interviews and the other text, the books themselves are Purple Hearts, Back from Iraq from Nina Berman, published by Trolley Books, and Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, A Photographer's Chronicle of the Iraq War, Ashley Gilbertson's book, published by University of Chicago Press. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks.